Chapter 5. Building Trust. Long fluorescent lights hang from the high ceiling, and an old but clean carpet blankets the concrete floor. A portable propane heater hisses to warm the chilly winter air, which snakes its way inside our hangar. Jetlag lies on his side not far from the warmth of the glowing heat. The kit was shipped from the factory in large boxes containing cardboard sheets. Each sheet holds shrink-wrapped parts, which are labeled with an identifying number. Dan helps me to take inventory of my new kit. He's told me this is an important step. Dan has assembled many of these planes before, and if I'm missing any parts, it's best to let the factory know now, so obtaining correct parts won't hold up the assembly process. Rich is often busy with family life, and sometimes his work will overflow into the weekends. It's good to see him out at the hangar today. He was really hoping to fly, but the weather isn't so great. Always full of energy, Rich hangs a new aviation calendar above the workbench. 12 glossy pages of beefcake beauties posed alongside famous World War II planes. With that task complete, Rich looks for something else he's qualified to undertake. He may know his way around a printed circuit board, but according to Dan, nuts and bolts must beware of his presence. Dan often gets nervous when Rich handles tools around airplanes. Rich is a natural-born seat-of-the-pants pilot with an adventurous spirit, but Dan has always helped him when it came to doing any maintenance on Rich's plane. Most of the time, Dan volunteers to work on Rich's plane rather than watch Rich screw it up, only to have Dan fix it anyway. The assembly manual for my kit is well-written, and each instruction is clearly stated. Rich, unsuccessfully finding any new projects, hovers overhead while munching on some potato chips. Dan helps me to get started with step 1. Attach item A to item B, securing with bolt C and nut D. Taking time and care with the straightforward process, I make casual conversation. "So, how did you guys get into sport flying?" Rich responds. "About 4 years ago, I was water skiing with my buddies out in the Delta when I met Dan flying around on floats. I thought it was the coolest thing how he could buzz around overhead and splash down wherever he wanted. So, anyway, Dan helped me get started in the sport, too. Since then, I've tried flying larger airplanes. They're great for getting you to your destination, but sometimes I think it's not so important where you go, but how you get there." As I assemble the first pieces of my kit, Dan shows me how to torque the nut so as not to distort the aluminum tubing. He warns me not to allow the bolt to spin while tightening, because that can score the shank of the bolt and leave it weakened. "How about you, Dan? How'd you get started?" "I used to hang glide back in the early 80s. For a lot of us, it just naturally evolved into ultralighting and then from there to sport flying. I was an instructor for a while on the side, but it's difficult to make much money, so now I just like to fly for fun." Rich, quickly bored, heads over to his plane to put a little more air into his underinflated tires. Dan watches Rich and doesn't seem to consider this to be too much of a threat to Rich's plane. Privately, I ask Dan, "Do you ever feel afraid when you're up there?" "Well, I might get a little nervous sometimes, but if I'm getting too nervous, that tells me I must be doing something wrong. See, when flying, you want to stay mentally ahead of your airplane. You have to plan and visualize what's coming up next. That way, if you don't like what's going to happen next, you'll have the time to change your course of action. So if I begin to feel too nervous, it's time to change what I'm doing. Slow the plane down, climb to a higher and safer altitude, turn back, stop for more fuel, etc. The fun thing about flying is that you're in control, or at least you should be. If you don't like a particular situation, you can change it. Good pilot never gets boxed into a position where there isn't a comfortable way to get out. You know, keep your options open. Good pilots try hard not to scare themselves." Dan holds onto a bracket for me while I struggle to insert a metal rod into a closely fitted slot. "But how do you know when each and every situation is safe?" I ask. "In aviation, there's no such thing as something being maybe safe. If you think a situation is maybe safe, then you must consider it to be unsafe. All maybes fall into the no category. You must be absolutely sure it is safe, or you don't do it." Nodding, I respond, "Sounds kind of black and white." "Yep." The cage structure of the cockpit has been completed on my first weekend of assembly. I'm happy with the results and appreciate all I've learned hangar flying on this rainy Sunday afternoon. The very next weekend, Dan and Rich are unable to come out, but I managed to get the tail section started on my own. It's on this day that Amelia graces me with her presence. As it isn't too cold out, she comes to keep me company. My first impression of her was that she was shy, but now I see her opening up more. I know not to breach the subject of Amelia's past by how she always turns the conversation to the present. I find her a fantastic resource of information and wisdom. I'm surprised at how quickly I feel at ease discussing some of my concerns. While I work on my plane's rudder, our friendship grows, and I begin to confide in her. I explain my increasing phobia about airline travel and the uncertainty I have over whether I might ever learn how to fly this plane I'm building. At a good stopping point, I put down the rudder and turn to her. I hate this fear of flying I have. It's affected my life in more ways than I would have ever imagined. I'm ashamed to admit my fears, but I've got to do something. I miss out on vacations, business conferences, and it spills over into other areas of my life. How can I allow this fear to control my life this way? Sitting in a chair near the workbench, Amelia replies, I think if you were to look at what motivates us, you'd find fear plays an important role. In our world, fear is common. We fear change. We fear stagnation. We fear dying. We fear living. We fear crowds. We fear loneliness. Fear affects our lives in so many ways. I don't know that fear is so much a psychological problem as an educational issue. Fear is the result of how we perceive a threat or a danger. If we could learn more about unfamiliar situations and become convinced that we could handle them, the fear would naturally subside. Sitting in a chair next to Amelia with my elbows on my knees, I say, But I detest my fear. It's gotten so bad that now when I'm on a jetliner, I'm afraid I'm just going to go crazy. It's like I'm afraid of panicking, and then I worry that my racing heart will cause a coronary, or I might just pass out. Amelia considers for a moment. Mark, I know it's hard to believe, but fear is actually a good thing. Fear acts as one of our defense mechanisms. It prepares us to fight or flee. It's an important emotion that protects us. The thing to remember when you feel these reactions and symptoms is that they may feel uncomfortable, but they won't physically hurt you. You won't lose control, faint, or have a heart attack. You're experiencing a healthy fear reaction, just as nature intended. And another thing, as she places a hand on my leg, often people who have strong fears also possess an overactive imagination. For example, they might hear an unfamiliar noise during a flight and begin imagining what might be wrong with the plane. Or they may believe in signs or have premonitions their plane will crash. They might have a dream or hear a song about an accident. Sometimes books or movies use dreams to give the story a supernatural or surreal feel. Those may be entertaining, but you should try to stick with reality and facts. A lot of people subconsciously believe they have ESP, but odds are they aren't psychic. Remembering how I'd reacted to the American Pie song on my flight to Denver, I feel a sinking sensation in my stomach. She was right. How could some stupid lyrics in a song affect my flight? She seems to know exactly how to address my concerns. Standing up, heading for the refrigerator, I say, You know, I feel better just talking about it. Would you care for a cola? Amelia slowly rises and accepts my offer. After a few sips, I decide it's time to get back to work. I start on the difficult task of finishing the tail's horizontal stabilizer. This is the part of the tail that the elevator is hinged to. Earlier, I put off this segment of the assembly because I knew it wouldn't be easy. Sure enough, while trying to get the tight fabric pulled over the tail section, I get frustrated and find myself swearing at the seemingly impossible task. In my bafflement, I complain, I don't know if this is worth it. What am I doing? Sometimes this damn plane just won't cooperate. Maybe I should give up on this idea of flying anyway. Amelia absently runs her hand along the wing of Dan's plane and continues. Mark, you don't yet appreciate the magic you hold in your hands. You're so close to a miracle you don't realize it. Throughout man's long history, people have dreamt of the marvel of flight. It's only been in the brief era of the last generation that this has been possible. With a scant few nuts and bolts, you possess the powers the ancient Greeks like Icarus coveted. Relax, Mark. You'll soon be flying high in the sky, close to the sun, without the concerns of melting wings. With that, Amelia eases away from Dan's plane and explains she must head back home, leaving me to put away my tools and close up the hangar. I haven't given up on the tail yet. I'll just need some help. The next weekend, Dan makes it out, and Amelia comes by too. This time, she has one of her exotic birds with her. It's an African gray parrot named Howie. African greys are one of the most intelligent and best-speaking birds among the parrot species. Many show a definite preference for only one human. All African grey parrots have the potential to speak and imitate not only human, but all types of sounds. As I would find out, this particular bird is a little bit of a troublemaker. Dan helps me to finish the tale with ease. As we work on assembling the wings, Howie has a little fun with jet lag. I guess somewhere along the line, Howie must have been around a cat, because just as jet lag starts to doze off, Howie lets out a long, meow. Hearing this, jet lag's head pops up off the floor. He looks around, and then bellows an instinctive, oof. I can hardly believe it, but that damn parrot chuckles. Ha 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 ha. Poor old jet lag. About the time he relaxes and closes his eyes again, Howie starts the process all over with another, meow. This goes on for most of the day. Amelia, wrapped in a warm sweater, seems satisfied to sit quietly and watch Dan and I work on my project while Howie perches on her shoulder. My plane's wing resembles the shape of a ladder. There's a leading-edge spar and trailing-edge spar with struts and ribs connecting the two. Once the basic structure of each wing is complete, Dan helps me slip on the pre-sewn Dacron fabric covering. Endlessly impressed with Dan's skill and knowledge, I bring up the subject of airline maintenance. Dan, how can I trust the people who are responsible for the plane I'm riding on? Of course, I wouldn't mind if you were always my mechanic.
First of all, the FAA helps to ensure safety by monitoring and certifying all of the safety-related people who work in aviation. Then there's a natural tendency for each worker to not only take pride in their own work, but also to keep an eye on others. Because we understand the importance of our work on the safety of passengers, we won't tolerate anything less than perfection. We put our own families on those airplanes.
Now that I got him going, I thought I'd pick his brain a bit more. They say jet engines are pretty reliable. How do they work? With the fabric over the wing, Dan smooths out the wrinkles with his hands.
Turbine engines are simple. They don't have parts moving in every direction like a piston engine. Jet engines just have a series of spinning turbine fans. Air goes in the front, it's compressed by fans, fuel is introduced and burned, and the high-pressure exhaust gases spin more fans to create thrust. Once the fuel starts burning, it keeps burning. Just continue adding fuel and the engine continues running. They're really very straightforward and dependable.
As I do my best to mimic Dan's motions to smooth the fabric from the opposite side of the wing, I hear another meow. Shortly thereafter is the sound of woof, followed by a predictable ha 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 ha. Amelia smirks as if she feels responsible for her bird's behavior and adds, Howie, shame on you. Dan continues,
A lot of people think it's the engines which keep the plane in the air. The engines don't make lift. The engines just provide the push to keep the plane moving forward. And without the engine's push, a plane can glide incredibly well by pointing the nose slightly downward. This provides the necessary speed. In fact, jetliners glide on just about every flight to save fuel. Normally, about 100 miles from the airport, the pilots will bring the throttles back to idle and let the plane glide all the way to the airport. Then, just before the landing, the pilots increase the power to prepare for any unexpected events, such as a go-around.
With the right wing covered, Dan prepares the left wing for the fabric. Also, Mark, every important system on a jetliner has backups. Redundancy is there not only for safety, but for reliability, too. If the jetliner isn't dependable, the airline loses money. But really, safety's an airline's most important product. CEOs know that if the customer no longer considers his company's airline safe, the party's over. The shareholders will can him in a New York second. These sessions out at the hangar are more valuable to me in getting over my fears than any clinic or course I could attend. In the meantime, my plane's almost done. Over the next few weekends, Dan and I put the finishing touches on my new plane. He shares a great deal of his expertise during the assembly process, and I must admit I'm quite happy with the results. My plane looks great with its glossy red wings and tail. While building it, I've learned what every little nut, bolt, and cable is for. I feel I'm more thoroughly familiar with this piece of machinery than anything I've worked on before. During our days in the hangar, Dan and Amelia have coached me in the ways of flying. I've enjoyed wearing a mechanic's hat, but next step is to trade it in for a pilot's hat. It looks like I'm about to face my greatest fear head on.